Ladies and gentlemen, welcome from my side. My name is Sylvia von Kaufmann, and it's a great pleasure for me to act as moderator on that very interesting, but as you have seen, complicated issue this morning. Martin Winter, in his introduction, said he wants to change the world in Europe, and I do agree to that wish. But I am a little bit afraid that changing the world in Europe takes a bit time. And so we start for a two-day conference on one issue, on citizenship. And of course, with the first panel, we can only start changing the world. But step by step, I think it can be changed. So I'm very happy that we have in the first panel here experts who are dealing for a long time with citizens' issues, let's say it like that, very broadly. And so that we spend some time with the panelists here, and then I propose that you also have the possibility to ask questions to our experts, and then in the afternoon, tomorrow, we will have quite a lot of time to go much more into details, because Dr. Schoen made a broad overview over the whole issue, and I think there are a lot of questions in. So let me start with Mr. Wöhl, who is coming from Belgium, from the European Commission unit, and dealing in detail with EU citizenship. And as I heard, he was also involved in the report on citizenship the Commission just presented. So what about these 25 actions in there concerning people with citizenships and people living in Europe having no citizenship? What do you think? Where are we now with EU citizenship? What are the main issues from the Commission's perspective we should go on changing the world in Mr. Winter's direction? Mr. Wöhl, please.
Okay. The mic is, yeah. Thank you, and also thanks for organizing this conference. As rightly was pointed out, 27 of November this year, so only 2-3 weeks ago, the Commission presented the EU Citizenship Report 2010. And the EU Citizenship Report is a very broad report, and it deals with all the problems that EU citizens might have in their daily lives and in their daily roles as EU citizens. They may be consumers, they may be students, and they may be workers. They may also be partners in a couple, and during all their roles in their respective lives, they may encounter some obstacles. And the report sets out these obstacles and also sets out the strategies and the measures the Commission intends to tackle and to bring forward. So, as was mentioned, it has 25 measures, and I think it's a very good time for this report, and I'll very briefly explain why I think it's a very good time now, and it's also a very good time for this conference. Nearly 17 years ago, on the 1st of November 1993, the Maastricht Treaty entered into force, and Union citizens were given the rights under the treaty. And since then, a lot has changed, and also I think a lot has changed recently. There was a lot of new impetus given to European citizenship. There was a legal political impetus from the Lisbon Treaty, which clearly makes the citizenship a clear role and gives it a clear role and a reinforced role. Just by saying it was already mentioned, and now we have not complement, but is additional to. Also, for example, the right to consular protection was remarkably strengthened. And we also had a political impetus lately. President Barroso made it very clear in his guidelines for the Barroso II Commission, for this commission now, that citizenship is at the heart of his policies, and also that he specifically asked Vice President Reding to carry out this report that we now have presented, looking into the obstacles and trying to overcome them, so that every citizen, regardless of where he lives in Europe, can exercise his rights freely, like in his or her own member state. And I think that's a very good message, and it's a very concrete and positive steps forward to make citizenship a tangible reality. And I obviously won't have the time to present all the 25 measures now, but let me just set out a few. For example, civil status documents. If you are living in another country, you would like to marry in another country. Once you live abroad, you might also fall in love. So if you want to strengthen this bond of love, marry, you might need a civil status document, like a birth certificate. And then you might have problems that this birth certificate is recognized in this country. Or in some countries, documents are being asked for that other countries do not even know. So here, we, the Commission, will set out a legislative proposal in the next years, trying to overcome this obstacle. And also, just to give a second example, consular protection, I mentioned it has been strengthened under the Lisbon Treaty. Now, for the first time, the Commission has a legal base and is empowered to set out directives on cooperation, measures on consular protection. And I think this is also really strengthening the right of European citizens, because up to now it was a member state's play. Member states were making decisions among themselves. Now there's the right of initiative for the Commission. And the Commission will set out, once the European Action External Action Service is into force, so in March, a communication, set out its way forward in consular protection. And also for next year, some legislative measures are foreseen. So just for this up to now, and I think we can broaden the discussion later on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Will. You see there are a lot of obstacles for EU nationals who additionally are EU citizens, and we are not in the position in nowadays European Union that we really have, no obstacles in exercising our citizenship. We do have. The debate here is to overcome EU citizenship and to think about alternatives. But first of all, I think it's also very important to focus on these little tiny obstacles you just described with some examples we still live with. Mr. Tony Venables, we know each other for quite a long time, working together, I think, also in a debate on European Constitution. And I have to say, when I remember that, and looking to Lisbon Treaty now, I'm still sad that we have lost European Constitution with the referendum, though, in France and Netherlands, because if you look in the text of European Constitution, you will see that the concept of citizenship was the concept constituting that text. That time we had an Article 1 and European Constitution, and it was for me as former member of Convention one of the most important steps forward that we managed to bring that in. I read it out. That article said, reflecting the will of the citizens and states of Europe to build a common future, this constitution enables the establishes the European Union. So it was made clear by the first sentence that the citizens are establishing European Union. And it's not only the member states not like we have it now. And if you look into the text then, there was a very prominent place for citizenship. It was just in the first part of Constitution, and it was a different kind of definition like we have it now in the treaty. So if we want to change the world, like Mr. Winter said in the beginning, so maybe we should take a step to come back to that concept of that time. What do you think about? What are your ideas? I mean, you're dealing with the issues for such a long time, like me. Not these 25 measures Mr. Ver was talking about.
I think it's a very good question, but it's also, if I may say so, I think it's a dangerous question in some ways, because it's almost saying we don't really have European citizenship yet. And I'd like to begin by a rather provocative remark. I think there is a sort of danger that the supporters of European citizenship want so much more that they're talking about a fully inclusive, fully coherent citizenship and ignoring what exists. And in the meantime, what exists is under heavy attack right now. I mean, there's a lot of right-wing parties, extreme right-wing parties getting into power, and a lot of our efforts have to go into defending what exists. So let's get a bit real here, I think, would be my message. In reply to your question, I think that a trick was played, a trick here in Berlin, essentially, very much behind closed doors, that to deconstitutionalize the text, to say this is a different text and let's get it through. In reality, it didn't change that much. I agree with what you say about the opening passages. They clearly did put the citizen very much at the heart of it. But I think we can still say this is the case. I think if we seriously think about the European Union and what has been happening recently, what is it that could really bind this bigger union of 500 million people together, 27 states? It is some sense of common citizenship that remains, whether or not it's in the text, it remains very much the case. And I think that what is in the Lisbon Treaty is largely preserves for the citizen what was in the former text. And I'd just like to say a word about that, because I don't see a big need to claim more from the overall legal framework right now. We have the Charter of Fundamental Rights, which is legally binding. I agree with everything which was said about having a citizenship based more on residents, including third country nationals. Of course, we have two groups of migrants in Europe. It doesn't make sense in the long run. But I think we also have to examine to what extent the gap between these two groups is closing, and it's possible to close it further through legal action, because the Charter of Fundamental Rights includes universal rights, it modernizes rights. Only a small number of those rights are really reserved for European citizens. So if it's applied properly, and the Commission actually issued another paper on 21st of October on the implementation of the Charter, if it's applied properly, it could further reduce the gap. We have a directive for free movement rights of long-standing third country migrant workers. So there is more free movement possible among, say, the Turks in Germany or the Moroccans in Belgium. I think we have to be careful not to be too negative. And I just sort of end opening remarks there, I think.
Well, let's be realistic, not too negative, as you said, but nevertheless, the issue of this conference is to think about new models of citizenship, and I remember in convention we discussed, of course, that I made, for example, an amendment to broaden the definition of citizenship because I also thought long-term certain nationals with long-term residence who are legally living in European Union should be included into the definition, and my amendment I made. Time definition of 5 years. I said those who are living for 5 years should be also regarded as citizens, but I have to say, even in convention when we had a big mood of change and reform for European Union that had no chance at all. There were only very, very few colleagues who followed that idea. So, Professor Kostakopoulou, what do you think about that idea? Is that for you an alternative? Because we want to be realistic, but we also want to be to look into the future. So is that an alternative model for you for citizenship?
Yes, it is. And it has been for such a long time. This has been on the agenda since 1993. And in this respect, I both agree and disagree.
Take the microphone.
Yes, I both... agree and disagree with what Mr. Venable said. The Charter can be used in many progressive ways, and there is Article 35 of the Charter that allows for the possibility of extending free movement and residence to third country nationals. Sorry, I just moved my head right and left to look at you.
And move the mic too.
Yes,
like
move
that.
The mic as well. Lack of coordination. Yes, so Article 45, Provision 45 of the Charter could be used in a progressive way. But also, it is important to retain this sense of vision precisely because there is an increased right-wing populism and there is a backlash against multiculturalism. So perhaps the solution to this is not to be real, but to be visionary and to be also progressive. We have to capture the mainstream discourse. We have to put forward alternatives. And this is the only alternative that can be justified on the basis of democratic principles, and Martin mentioned this in his opening speech, civic inclusiveness, equality, Annette mentioned it as well. So it is an alternative. I don't know whether it's the only alternative, and I don't know whether the road to it would be a treaty amendment which conditions EU citizenship on domicile. We couldn't possibly devise other means by which to reach that outcome. But I think that should remain as a vision.
Yeah, well, it's fine that you agree, but I'm afraid we need a treaty revision. And that's, if you want to have a new definition of citizenship, we can't do that by majority vote in European Parliament. It doesn't help. So, and what about treaty revisions? We don't discuss this issue here. It's everybody knows how complicated it is, and maybe European Union will be in the position to solve the euro crisis and financial crisis by treaty revision, but I'm sure, and they won't deal at the same time with citizenship issues. Dr. Schoen, you're coming from the Netherlands, and concerning citizenship, I don't want to touch your speech just now, which I found really very interesting, and you touched a lot of different very important issues with that respect to citizenship. But picking up the word of being realistic of Tony Venables, could you just tell us about the debate in the Netherlands that time on the constitution? Because I think citizenship was not the main issue in the Netherlands, but as a background, what political background we are discussing the topic, I think we should be we should look very closely what is this political discussion in our own member states. And in the Netherlands, I think the fear of building up a super state was quite strong that time. And if we want to overcome the nowadays definition of EU citizenship, then we also, I think, have to overcome that kind of fear that European Union will be a super state. What do you think, what are the chances in the Netherlands for that? Did the situation change compared to the years before, or is it still the same debate concerning EU?
Well, concerning EU, it has changed, but it is even more going towards national identity and national interest, and not opening up the Netherlands for other persons. It's really inward-looking atmosphere at the moment, and I'm afraid. at the time of the debate on the constitution, it was not even that much union citizenship. It has to do with a fear for a super state, maybe. But in my opinion, it also had to do with the fact that at the time the government stood not really up for the constitution. They said, we signed the constitution, we like it, and now think what you do with it. Vote on it. It was the first time we had a referendum, and if you are able to vote, you want to vote against. So I think that also has a bit to do with it. It is that those circumstances, plus it was easy to vote against because France already had rejected the constitution in the referendum. So the consequences for the Netherlands itself were not that dramatic, probably. So that also had to do with the vote against the constitution. But in general, the atmosphere in the Netherlands is now really on, yeah, it is more on national identity. For instance, we had a discussion on, there was a discussion on people in government having two passports, whether that should be allowed or not. So a Dutch passport and another passport. Now, if that already is an obstacle, it tells you what the atmosphere is.
It shows where we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so you have heard now short inputs for very different issues, and we know where we are, and we have an idea where we want to go to. So we have about 45 minutes now left for the first panel. Maybe if some of you wants to join the discussion, wants to present some questions, please be free and show up your hand saying that you want to make a comment on what you heard of Dr. Schouwen, or that you want to come join us in the debate and the discussion of today. So is there anybody who wants to ask a question? Yes, here in the first line, if you could be so kind to give him the microphone. Yes, please.
Thank you. It was a very interesting discussion. I thank you very much for it, also to see different positions and also already some different visions as to real or ideal. And I want to go a little bit in that direction too by asking the question. We always talk about citizenship as if it's something that we can just establish by treaties. If we put citizens up in the treaty, then they're there. And as Mr. Venable said, we maybe can take it down a notch and also look what do we have in laws and rights that are not explicitly termed in citizenship notions, but that are there, and that are also in respect to third country nationals, and that we maybe, and I would like to hear your opinion on that, come down a little bit from this idealist talk about we need like a residence-based citizenship for all. I mean, that's also a bit a kind of paradox, because citizenship is in definition not for all. It's always been a distinction of the citizen and the non-citizens. But we have a lot of rights that are expanding in a liberal state. It's this is going on since at least the French Revolution. It's expanding and it's expanding, and at the end there is citizenship, but it has to be developed incremental from directives, and it's happening. And maybe we should also look, as you said, we could use the Article 35, but we can, you know, focus more on these things, use on articles, use on particular legislation, and develop a kind of spiral that leads more and more into the direction of rights for all, instead of riding the high horse of ideology, in a way. So keep it real, but with a vision. And I'd like to also hear more specifically maybe about Article 35 or those directives that were also mentioned that could be used, and what your opinion is. Where is something happening right now, and in which direction could it go if we take care to take it there?
Yeah. Tony, please. Yep. And then you.
Well, what you said is actually very close to our agenda. I think we, first of all, I'd like to say that I'd like to congratulate Europe for Citizens for working on the concept of European citizenship, because I think this is something which has been lacking in what is coming forward from the Commission. We have a very energetic commissioner in Vice President Reding, who is responsible for citizenship, fundamental rights and justice. This is something ECAS, my organization, has been asking for years and years. We, you know, it's difficult to talk about citizenship if there was no opposite number in the commission, etc. She's a very practical woman. She likes to get things done, which is good. But part of getting things done in this area is to transmit some concept about European citizenship with all these directives from the Commission and the European Parliament, which do embrace the concept, towards the member states who do not, on the whole. And that's very difficult. A lot of the difficulties of enforcement come from this lack of having a concept which is shared across Europe. So you're right to work on the theory what the ideal is, but you're also right to say that a lot of citizenship is unbundled. I mean, it goes incrementally. And I think we would simply have a very simple three-point agenda. The first is enforcement. I mean, come on, do get real. Look at the Roma. I mean, look what happened there, and the lessons have to be learned. That wasn't just a little barrier. That was mass expulsion. And the French government getting away with it, because the Commission doesn't have a power of injunction. It is not able to say to a member state, stop it. So by the time they brought their legislation into line, and the legislation is one thing, the application is really the problem, they will have been able to use a barrier to free movement to solve a problem which had never been solved by breaching European law. So there is a big problem of enforcing the rights, and as you say, building from the bottom up, using much more the possibility of complaints to the Commission, petitions to the European Parliament, requests to the European Ombudsman, and the type of work we do, which is how to strengthen the enforcement mechanisms, because I think people won't feel like European citizens until they're really treated like that and they sort of see the practical added value of it. And then the second point in our agenda would be to seize the new citizens' initiative right, which Yvonne Kaufmann worked on in the previous parliament. Her report has largely got through. I think it's not true that the council is likely to destroy this, actually. I think the parliament has really taken a very progressive... The European Parliament is prepared to share their right of initiative with us, which is a very mature political position, and they're determined to make the legislation a lot easier so it could be used not just by multinational NGOs but by genuine citizens groups, you know, looking for 1 million signatures to propose legislation. And the real test is, will this have some spillover? I mean, it's not direct democracy, it's still indirect democracy, but would it just be seen as the exception to the rule, a kind of citizen's annex to the normal decision-making process, or could it make the whole system in Brussels much more open and citizen-friendly? But this is now, we have a year before this regulation will come into force, so this is really the theme now on the agenda at EU level in terms of the whole political process, and it's better to engage with that if you can. Then our third point would be to use what is now a stronger basis. I agree with what the Commission said. I think the sixth report on European citizenship is a lot stronger than the previous ones. And it's accompanied by a program to get rid of 25 barriers. And it's also linked, which I think will please you actually, looking at what you've done and written about, it's linked to a single market act with 50 measures to remove barriers to the single market. So there's quite a sort of solid basis in policy terms coming for building on the future. And of course, within that future, there are questions of political rights in national or regional elections for European citizens. There is the question of further closing the gap between EU citizens and third country nationals, particularly as regards, say, voting rights in the European Parliament, political rights. And this would take us towards the year 2013. And the year 2013 has been sort of identified by the Commission, by Viviane Reding, as a year of citizens. So I think, you know, be realistic now and then put the idealism into building up support and ideas around a more developed concept of European citizenship leading towards this year in 2013.
Yeah, that was a good point. Maybe, please, Professor, yeah, ladies first.
Just, yes, two very brief points, and I take everything you've said on board. What I do not quite understand from the question is why you believe that these citizens, or citizenship based on residence, is a matter of ideology. For me, it has always been an issue of justice and democracy and not ideology. I've never understood why should somebody be a burden sir within a community since day one, and then we had to wait for 10 years or 5 years to enjoy the basic benefits that others enjoy. If, to use an analogy, and let's say that I wish to take part in another community and another workplace, be employed by another university, if I went there and did the same amount of teaching as everybody else, and the same type of research, I was equally productive, and if they told me, well, you'll be paid £2,000 less than anybody else during the first 5 years, during your probation, for example, as a probationary citizen, or you won't enjoy sabbatical for the next 5 years, I would really be absolutely upset. And we think that the issue is an issue of fairness and justice, and not an issue of ideology. That should be treated equally. So perhaps we should rethink our initial positions. Why should somebody, a burden sharer, have to wait for 2, 3, 5, 10 years in order to enjoy the benefits that ought to enjoy as a result of the burden sharing and contribution that he or she makes to the community? That's a
just a second. Do you want to join on that debate? Or we go on with
thank you. I'll pick up on quite some of the remarks that have been made, with quite some of them I actually do agree. I think it's very important to go ahead with concrete steps, and maybe this I think this is also a kind of vision in itself, and also the broadening of the scope of citizenship that the citizenship report illustrated showed the way forward quite significantly, I think. What I believe is that if you're talking about citizenship, it cannot be only a concept that comes from the clouds, but it needs to be something that is lived in daily lives and that is lived all over Europe, not only in Brussels, but all over Europe. And that has to come also from the citizens. So we as Commission, we cannot enforce or force people to move, to reside abroad, but what we can do and what we are very willing to do is facilitate. And if they want to make use of these rights, then they should be able to do so freely and without major obstacles. And I think this is also the way forward, that we really look into these obstacles that they're facing, and also that we are ambitious on projects where we can be more ambitious. For example, when I mentioned consular protection, We as Commission believe that third country nationals should also be included in having access to consular protection like EU citizens, as you might, well, this will not be easy to accomplish, but this is our firm belief. Also, just going back to what I just said, I think that also if you look at Germany, for example, it's a communauté de fait, a community that is built on concrete steps and on concrete steps forward. So basically pragmatism combined with vision. I also think that it's very important to really implement and enforce what is there. That also has been mentioned several times, and we fully share this view. We have three categories outlined in the EU citizenship report, and the first one of them is enforcement and implementation. And also the Vice President takes this very serious, and also she has been, if I may say this, at this occasion, she has been now nominated for one of the four, I think it's four or five commissioners of the year, also for her very strong engagement on citizenship issues. This is basically, yeah, maybe one last comment. I think what on a more personal note, I think what we also recognize and see is that citizens' role is more diversified now than maybe as it was some years ago. Like, there's not the citizen anymore. We simply have a more diversified life. We may be interested in special types of music, special hobbies, and we may have different needs. So this is also why we are looking into all these 25 actions, trying to accommodate with citizens if there may be, as there's not the citizen. And I think also what is taken and how citizenship is enacted on a level across Europe is, for example, that maybe citizens are less inclined, like maybe nationals, maybe Germans are less inclined to have one type of TV program, one type of music they're into, but they're, at least this is my personal observation, they might be more willing to share it with other people from other member states. And I think Berlin is a very good example. Berlin is famous for its nightlife, and a lot of the people that actually form part of this nightlife are not from Berlin, but they're flying in from all over Europe. They're flying in because they like the music that is happening in Berlin. So I think this is also a very concrete expression of how citizenship develops currently. Thank you.
Well, that's true. Do you want to comment on the question raised too?
Yes, I would like to make a small comment on the practical implementation of citizenship. I think that, well, there is an enormous focus on free movement, but I think you can also foster citizenship if there is more of a public debate in Europe on other issues as well. And now I think, for instance, on developing energy, renewable energy, or biomedical issues, these are issues that also concern people living in the European Union. And if for some, it is the debate there on a European level is not really present, at least I do not really see that in the newspapers. And I think debates like that can also foster a sense of living in a community and debating the values of that community.
Well, I just like to pick up, yes, please, I just like to pick up that if we look into nowadays reality, then we see that we mainly have national debates on national issues, and the consciousness of being European, transnational debates, that we focus environmental problems, that we focus, I don't know, tax issues, marriage, cross-border marriage, or whatever. These kinds of debates we don't have, which are moving the people in different member states at the same time. I think that is a situation in society I think we need as a background if we want to change the concept of citizenship, because you need this kind of awareness raising. You know, people are flying in, as you said, they are flying into Berlin, right? They like it. They're coming from Spain, from Denmark, and wherever. But their coming for the music and not with the consciousness, I'm a citizen of Europe and I have a wonderful right to go around, you know, free movement. So what we need is this kind of, I think, awareness raising, and that's why I setting such a lot of hopes on the Citizens Initiative. You know, if people start cross-border to push for an issue, for European legislation, to start cross-border discussion on a certain issue, whatever it is in European politics, I think that's a big, big chance to overcome all that indoor looking you were talking about. So please, there was another question. Please,
just a quick remark to anybody. Please introduce yourself before asking your question.
Yes, thank you. Mechthild Baumann from the European Academy here in Berlin. I really like the end of the discussion. At the beginning, we were talking a lot about concepts and rights. That's important in how we can evolve the concept of citizenship. But what I think is much more important, as important as the question of concepts, is how we can convince the citizens in exercising the rights that they have. And this touches upon the last points that you were raising. And I think the problem is all the measures that we have, they are directed at, let's say, academic citizens. When you talk about cross-border marriage and a political debate which goes beyond the whole Europe, but this only addresses a very small part of citizens, which means high-qualified academic citizens. The question that I'm dealing with in my daily work is how can we address, let's say, normal citizens who don't read big newspapers every day, how can we convince them in exercising the rights that they have? And that's a question that I would really like to discuss with you because, I need some help there because it's very difficult. We had several workshops and conferences where we invited, let's say, normal citizens who don't have an academic background. And they always agreed when it came to the question of, do you want to have more rights? Yes, sure, we want to. We want more rights. But when we asked them, would you spend some of your time in exercising your rights? Would you like to engage in political things and initiatives? Well, then they always rejected. And that's the point. How can we trigger that? And that's a discussion that I would also like to trigger here. Thank you.
Oh, yes, that's very important. But I've seen there are two more questions just in the back, please.
I'm Ségolène Prouveau from Europe and Alternatives. I thank Tony Venable for having mentioned the issue of the Roma. We were discussing a progressive way to use the notion of European citizenship. It seems to be that, as you mentioned, enforcing the rights that are in the Charter of Fundamental Rights now is even not a progressive way, but it's a necessary way of ensuring the fight against discrimination. What I'm trying to say that is not only a matter of mass expulsion of the Roma from France, but there was, in that case, clear discrimination over European citizens, clear stigmatization of community, and that's something that is not even possible in national rights, and that is not possible according to the European treaties, according to the Charter of Fundamental Rights. So. Now, on these points, there needs to be an activation of these rights. We were very happy to see that Commissioner Reding made a step in this direction. From now, I think last time I heard something, it was on the 15th of October, when she said that her lawyers needed 4 weeks to study the case of discriminations to see whether it would be or not recognize that there has been discriminations. I haven't heard anything on the 15th of November. It's maybe my fault. Maybe you have an update on that. And just very pragmatically on using progressively this notion of citizenship in free movement in Europe, it's possible in some countries to do civil unions between either heterosexual or homosexual partners. Whereas if I use these civil union rights in France and then with my partner I move with another country, my civil union is not always going to be recognized. I want to know if that would be one way to progressively give content to the notion of citizenship.
Oh, there was another question around? Yeah, please.
So, good morning. My name is Gianluca Giovannucci. I'm from Italy, Rome. I'm president of the European College, University College Association. So I want to stress the necessity, in my personal opinion, of course, that for the final step of the citizenship, we need to involve more and more the youth, the youngsters, because I had two very beautiful experiences, thanks to the Commission, also the European Commission. We made a project about citizenship. We will speak in the afternoon about this. And we had the possibility to join together students coming from five or six countries working together in the countries, moving together. And then in the summer, in August, we went to Cambridge for a seminar about Europe, about the European citizenship. Students coming also from Russia, Ukraine, and other not member countries. So it was very interesting for me, I'm not so young, to discover how the young people feel Europe. They really feel European. But in my opinion, we need to do more things with them. Not only movement, but to study, not debate conferences, but to let debate themselves, to study together, to stay together in the different countries, and to live together. Because this is a unique way to discover. As we have the same roots in English and in German and Italian also. We have the same roots in our past, made by wars, conflict, etc., but the same roots, and we are more closer between us than, with all the respect, with the Africans or the Chinese people. So we are European. I heard with my ears Hans-Gert Pottering speaking to these young people about this. Now, this is very important because the possibility, the facility to move the students. Erasmus is a good idea, but we have to change something because now it's a holiday, more or less. But the idea is very good to study, to apply, to do things in other countries, all together, the youngster can help. I don't think that the old people, like me, can do anything now for the future. They have to do this. I'm very happy to see many young people here. And so, like an Italian, I have full of hope, of course. It's typical of the Italian country to be. We have only hope, no money, no possibility, no industries, but a lot of hope. And so we ask money for the German people. But but we can do something with the youngster. It will start with the youth people. So help to the Commission to understand this and to do more programs to help this movement and to this action. But, thanks.
Well, thank you very much. So now we had a lot of different statements, questions. Maybe, Mr. Verl, I start with you because the question of couples, homosexual, lesbian, and their rights, maybe you can answer on that.
Yeah, of course,
to the others too, but because that was very special, maybe it's in the 25 measures of the Commission's Green Book, isn't it?
No,
it's not. But the Commission has recently been very positive of also including all like other types of partnerships. But let me start with the awareness raising, which was I think the first point, which was also raised by you. That I think is indeed a very important point. What, for example, we have noticed, this is nothing new, but obviously participation in the elections in the European Parliament has gone down. Each elections, last time it was 43%, I think the first time in 79 it was 63%. But on the other hand, when we ask people why they did not vote, about 80% of the citizens said that more information would make them more inclined to actually go and vote. So this is just one example. A second example is that only half of citizens, according to our polls, are fully or think they are fully aware of what European citizenship means, what rights it entails. And another example is, just to give a last one, we are having a lot of information and help assistance system at European level, just citizen signpost service, Solvit. One can also write to the Commission, to the European Ombudsman. But only 30%, or let's put it differently, 70% of citizens said they were not fully aware of these possibilities. So I think we really, as Commission, want to invest in awareness raising and need to increase awareness on these facilities, make it easier for the citizen. For example, on the assistance system, we will create a one-stop shop, Your Europe for Citizens, so which will be a single entry point where you can get help and can be directed to other sources of information. So I think that should already be a very good starting point. Another thing, it was also raised as a question on how can we reach the citizen, what could we actually do? Of course, this depends a lot on your organization and what citizens you concretely work with. I can just give you some brief examples on what we will do on consular protection. Maybe this will you are able to draw some kind of inspiration from that. What we are intending to do is we will shortly launch a website that will have all the delegations in all the third countries. So you as a citizen, you are entitled to go to any other member state if your own member state does not have a consulate embassy there. But of course you need to know which other member state has a consulate embassy there. So we will shortly launch a website putting for each third country all the consulates and embassies that are there. So with a single click, you could go there and be informed maybe even before you're traveling, at least if you're traveling to more exotic places. Also regards consular protection, we intend to get in contact with travel guides publishers like Lonely Planet, Michelin, and we ask them to include some information on this ride. So I guess they have some kind of emergency section. So as citizens, we really try to think about where could citizens come across the need for their rights, and how could they easily have access and be informed on these rights. Okay, I think I'll stop there, not to be too long.
Okay, Dr. Schoen, please.
Yeah. I want to add on the awareness raising issue that I think that national politicians also have a role to play here, because very often they agree something in Brussels and then do not explain it at home, but only say, yeah, sorry, we had to do this because Brussels tells us to do so. And that's not really giving a positive image on the European Union. So I think there might be something to gain there as well. Furthermore, I think that the younger generation is more aware of European Union and Union citizenship. So it also is taking steps, and it is a matter of time, as already was said in the introduction this morning. Yeah, and then the question on same-sex marriages not recognized in all the member states. I think here you see how difficult it is to find a good solution to diversity, because who has to accept what diversity? Is it the union that has to accept that there is diversity of values, conceptions within the member states? Or is it the member states that have to accept that there is different values in the whole of the European Union and has to open up to all these different identifications, values, whatever you like to call it, in the whole union? So it is, I think it is very difficult, because it is, for some member states, this is a very sensitive question, whereas other member states or other people think it should not be a very sensitive question. And there you have how much diversity can you accept, and I think it's a problematic issue.
Yeah. Okay. Please.
Yes, thank you very much for the very interesting questions. First question, in terms of awareness, yes, it is a perennial problem. Perhaps a solution, perhaps a solution might be to identify aspects of their lives that are affected by either national laws or European laws, and then you can put forward the solution that Europe could provide. There are consumers, and there are certain instruments that would help them in their daily lives. They are tourists, and flights are getting cancelled, and they have rights as a result of European legislation. So perhaps trying to identify the various aspects of their lives which are affected by European legislation, and therefore you could show that Europe does make a difference. With respect to civil partnerships, yes, I do agree. We should not underestimate also the role that religion plays in this area. It's a very difficult issue, and I think that the solution would lie within both national arenas and the European arena. Only activism can put forward these ideas and put forward a progressive agenda with respect to this. Civil partnership was included in the Citizenship Directive 2004-38 as a result of activism NGOs put forward this idea. And with respect to younger generations, I agree with you, the future lies with them, not with us. We have committed so many mistakes, we've done so many wrongs, and we cannot undo these wrongs. They have to undo our wrongs and the wrongs of the previous generations. So they would have to be at the forefront.
Yes, Tony Villables.
Thank you very much. I think I should explain to you afterwards what I think has happened on the Roma, because it would take a long time. But I'd like to pick up on what was said by the European Academy from Berlin. We worked together on a project, a citizens panel, and I think one of the things to sort of work into your concept about European citizenship is that it's, and you've said this as well, the other panelists have said this as well, that it's very narrowly focused on free movement and some other rights coming from especially environmental law, etc. So you're affected and you can complain and you can do something about it and you have all these channels of communication. But if you just want to have a say in European affairs, you have the elections and then maybe or maybe not you see your MEP afterwards. So I think what we were working on together was the end of a period when Margot Wallström was experimenting with what she called Plan D for democracy, dialogue, and debate. And we were gathering citizens' panels from different countries and bringing them into contact with their own government and parliament and then bringing them together in Brussels. And I mean, we're an advice service. We run a citizen signpost service with about 12,000 questions a year from a citizen, and together with these panels, it's how we get a lot of our best ideas, and we can push these ideas. And I think it's very important to stress that this type of participatory democracy should continue. I mean, it shouldn't be abandoned just, say, for cost reasons. Which is now very much the problem in Brussels, because bringing citizens in direct contact with the EU institutions, provided they have the time to work on their proposals, is really excellent. I just want to add one point which has been made now about when people travel around, do they perceive Europe? And I think the answer is, do they feel like European citizens? And the mystery is that they do not. For example, one of the Roma communities in Romania doesn't go to Italy or to Spain, but actually goes to Ireland. No one knows why, but they always go to Ireland. And there are two villages in Poland which always send people to Belgium. why Belgium? No one knows. This is because of previous connections and social networks. And in my country, we don't talk about European citizens. We talk about the Poles and how they're working very hard. So all these flows, which are very, if you look at the map, they are extremely uneven. They are highly concentrated on a sort of North European axis and then a Southern axis. They're very uneven and not spread out enough. So that may be a reason why even the people who are practicing their rights as European citizens see a bilateral connection. They see a bilateral connection. Some research has been done on this, some very interesting research on how people perceive, you know, how they're looking at their host country and their country of origin, and the fact that with cross-border media, it's now quite easy to maintain this kind of dual citizenship rather than European citizenship. It's a very interesting phenomenon. But the real problem here is that if this picture is correct, which I think it probably is, if the Roma see one destination in France, maybe another destination in Italy, they're not seeing Europe. It explains the whole problem of the Roma, the difficulty for the Commission to get on the ground, and the difficulty from the ground up to get to the Commission. It's simply not part of the picture.
Well, it's such a complicated and very special issue you just touched, but you promised to talk about later or maybe in the break we are facing now. I'd like to thank you all. The time was running. We are 11:30 already. I'd like to thank Dr. Annette Schroen for her keynote speech, for her participation. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank Professor Costa Coppolo. I'd like to thank Tony Venables, and I thank Daniel Wöhl. Thank you very much. I think it was a very good first round. We touched a lot of issues. We learned that we need to be realistic, but with visions. And I liked very much our Italian speaker. He said he's full of hope, like all Italians. So let's be Italians for today and for tomorrow to come up with a new concept for EU citizenship. I wish you all good luck for your discussions today and tomorrow. Thank you so much and have a nice break now.